Well, thank you. Good to see everyone again. I was just thinking, I honestly really enjoy these meetings. That's how sad my life is. The 3 months getting together with the group of engineers in the area is exciting to me. So, first thing, if we could go around, we have a few new faces. I need to change my view so I see everybody. And just so we don't talk over each other and stuff, I'll just call you out by name, and we can just say, our name and where we work, kind of how we're involved with sewers and the tap. So, Jessica Rinner, I'm over at Water Environment Services. Which does my logo backwards to you guys or just me?
Just to
No,
you.
Yeah.
I'm looking at myself in the window, and the logo's backwards. So, I am a supervising civil engineer, which really doesn't mean much. It just means that I work at West in the Capital Group, and I enjoy collection systems. Kenny, do you mind introducing yourself?
Not at all. I'm Kenny, the sewer engineer for the city of Oregon City. Today, I think the sole person attending from there. Yeah, I think that's about it.
Great. Jeff?
Jeff Stallard with Water Environment Services, the capital manager here. I've been with West for coming up on 6 years now, but recently took over the role about 6 months ago.
Thank you. Jeff.
Hi, my name is Jeff Valentino. I work for the city of Milwaukee. I'm fairly new to the city. I've been here just over 2 months. But I'm here today to present a proposal for a sewer reconfiguration we're doing here in town.
Great. Thank you. Good to meet you. Marina?
Hi, I'm Marina Ascension. I'm an associate engineer at the city of West Lynn. And Eric is out on PTO, so he won't be attending today.
Great. Thank you for that. Chris?
Yeah, good morning, everybody. I'm Chris Randall, the Public Works Director, City of Happy Valley. And just for the new folks that are here, so Happy Valley relies on Water Environment Services for both its collection system and treatment of the wastewater that goes to the treatment plants, along with storm and surface water treatment. So they manage us full service district-wide in general. So you won't see any projects brought forward by the city, but the projects brought forward by WES are covering us as a community here. So just a heads up.
Thank you, Chris. Hakan?
Yeah, I'm the most recent engineer to join Water Environment Services just 3 weeks ago. I'm senior civil engineer with Jessica and Jeff. I'll be mostly, it looks like I'll be mostly working on wastewater treatment plants, but I will probably be involved a little bit in the collection side too. So I'm joining this meeting at least to begin with and kind of get to meet everybody and see everybody's face and know what's happening around Wes's immediate service area and, of course, which extends into everybody else's service area too.
Thank you. Darren?
Hi, I'm Derek Cannaparoli, Public Works Director for the City of Gladstone.
Kyle?
Hey, Kyle Bean. I'm the Field Operations Supervisor for WES.
I'll just say Kiko is our admin extraordinaire that makes sure that we do all these meetings appropriately. Thank you. Nathan?
Yeah, I'm Nathan Siever. I'm an associate civil engineer at WES. I'm the kind of junior staffer. I run smaller projects and help Jessica and the other engineers on their managed bigger projects here in the Capital Group.
Cool. So that's all of us. It's exciting. We've got like two new faces, right? Two new faces today. So thank you all. First thing on the agenda, and hopefully you received it on your meeting invite, is to review and approve the minutes from our March 16th meeting. Did anybody get a chance to read and have any changes or anything that they thought were appropriate? Typically we're pretty spot on, but as long as there's nothing glaringly wrong, if I could get a motion to approve and someone second to accept.
I'll make that motion. I move to approve the minutes from the last meeting.
Wonderful. Thank you, Kenny.
I'll second that, Jessica, for you guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Sorry, just taking some notes as well. So, because typically Stephen Rice does wonderful meeting minutes for us, but he's on vacation. So,
hopefully he's catching a lot of fish.
Cool. And the second thing, and one of the most exciting things, we have two proposals to review for funding under the regional INI IGA. The first one is from the City of Milwaukee. And actually, this will be the first project with the City of Milwaukee. So very exciting. Jeff, if you don't mind taking away and just kind of giving everybody an overview of what the project is.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me today. Hopefully you've had a chance to look at the grant proposal. There's a nice map in there showing kind of the area we're looking at and some statistics on the system we're looking at. But in general, we have a smaller neighborhood in town, Waverly Heights. It's located close to right next to Waverly Golf Course, which is right off of McLaughlin on the north side of town. It's like the northwest side of town. I think there's something like 30 homes that we're serving on our system there. The system is old. I think it was installed in the 60s. There's been some spot repairs on it, but we've done some TV work on it, and there are some substantial deficiencies on it that we're interested in repairing. Some of that is, some of it is vitrified clay pipe. Some of it is concrete pipe. The vitrified clay pipe is cracked. We have some misaligned joints. There's root intrusion. And so we're trying to rehabilitate that system, and we're primarily looking at, a CAPP, rehabilitation project. There might be some spot repairs that go with it. We're currently going into design for it. So we're looking for a consultant now. Part of that design is, going to include, we're hoping to include a year of INI monitoring. So we'd probably do it with one meter at the bottom of the system and, correlate that with some storms and see what our INI really looks like. We don't have any INI data at the moment. We have more regional metering, but the purpose really of the INI portion of our project is really just to quantify and hopefully help with our program here, tracking how much INI is really getting into the system. Our proposal is generally covering that monitoring program, a year's worth of monitoring, as well as the CAPP design, or really the rehabilitation design, because I think parts of it are going to be spot repairs where they're possibly trenching and maybe replacing pipe. There's about 4,400 linear feet of pipe. Again, it's mostly concrete pipe, and there's sections of it that are vitrified clay pipe. And that's our project. Happy to answer more questions if people have questions. But that's where we're at.
Great. Thank you. Does anybody have questions?
I suppose I'll ask a very simple one. It's not spelled out explicitly in the proposal that you put in. This is within one of the reimbursable basins, correct?
Yeah. I think it's the Milwaukee Basin.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, it is. And I just want to offer, Jeff, I understand if you want to collect your own rain data while you have a meter out there. But West does have a rain gauge at behind Rao Middle School. And another.
Okay, great.
I believe there's another one at the Kellogg Creek facility. But
okay, that's great to know.
Yeah. So even if you just used ours to double check or whatever, it's a resource to you. And the permanent meter we have downstream of this basin, more than happy to supply you guys with the data of what we're collecting.
Okay? Cool. Cool. Yeah, I might reach out to you on some more info on the RAU meter. I think we had another one we were looking at that's like close to the border of Sellwood and Milwaukee.
Yeah, Portland has a couple out there too.
Yeah.
Awesome. Does anybody else have any questions, clarifying questions or anything? Okay. We typically vote, and it's one vote per member community. Dane is not here, so Kenny's voting member for Oregon City. Marina, if you don't mind being voting member for West Lynn. Chris, you've got Happy Valley. I've got West. Darren's got Gladstone. Are we missing anybody? Well, Jeff, maybe you get a vote in Milwaukee. Johnson City isn't here. They get a vote, but they haven't participated before. So I think that's all of us. So all in favor of approving City of Milwaukee's proposal to be included in the regional INI reduction IGA, please raise your hand. Cool. Thank you. Anybody don't want them to be included? Cool. All right. So yeah, next steps on our end, Jeff, I will work with our admin and we get you a signed letter that says at this meeting, the TAT approved your project under this and it's signed by Greg Geist. And I'll have that to you hopefully in about 2 weeks.
Great.
Application next week, but.
Okay.
And then, yeah, one of the things we'll discuss later, we do ask under the regional IGA that member communities who receive funding invoice us through like July through December and then December through June. But I can send you, if you don't have a copy of the IGA, I can send that to you with the information. And then we also we ask for an annual report for anybody who's received funding on what it was used for, how things are going, all that kind of stuff. And that's usually, well, it's not usually because this is the first time through, but we're hoping to get annual reports in August, September timeframe from member communities so that I can then do an overall report later in the fall for the Board of County Commissioners and the West Advisory Committee.
Great.
Hey, Jessica. I got a quick big picture question in general. How is the budget looking? I guess how many communities are actually interacting with the funds that are available? It seems like we've done a couple of different rounds, but it doesn't seem like we're using all the funds that are here. And I would just shout out to any of the communities that want to continue to ping us. But am I judging that correctly, or are we closer on budget than I'm guessing?
I don't know. As far as budget, we kind of set it based on projections from the member communities each year, trying to do a 3-5 year lookout. I believe we are under spending right now. We do have existing projects in Oregon City. I believe there's 3 of them, Kenny, that we're contributing to you guys right now.
At the moment.
Oh, and we just approved the last 2. So we're up to 5 with Oregon City, I believe. Mm-hmm. We've previously had 1 with Darren for City of Gladstone for the CCTV and spoke testing and the design. Yep. And then we're going to talk about in just a second here, the design has rolled into rehab in Gladstone. So this is the first one in Milwaukee. We don't have any in West Lynn yet. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for that overview, Jessica. I was just curious how we were looking in general. I know that it seems like the budget is there and it's a useful tool in my mind. So hopefully communities are continuing to consider the options anyway.
Yeah.
And then when I do give the CIP kind of update here, I do have a slide specifically around INI and how we're accounting for those reductions within our capital plan and why that's a benefit to all of us. I will further poke that that bear a little bit, Chris.
Love it. Thank you, guys.
Cool. So, yeah, if we're okay, can we move on to Gladstone? Darren, you want to give us a little overview of where you're, what you've been up to and what this proposal is for?
Sure. So The city of Gladstone, back in, I believe it was 2019, entered into a MAO with the DEQ. And part of that MAO is eliminating the INI within our system. From that, we worked with Leeway Engineering to go through and evaluate the entire two basins that are mentioned here. From that, we've got an INI reduction plan moving forward, which was one of the milestones we had to have for DEQ. We submitted that in November of 2020. After that, we hired Leeway Engineering again to do design for projects 1 and 2 out of that document. By completing these two projects, it will make our MAO whole, so to speak. So we'll no longer be under that, which is excellent. So some of the things with this project are eliminating basically 36 different cross connections. 24 of those are private, and looks 13 of them are public. With that, we're going to be working with property owners to reduce the issues. We'll be paying the bill for that. The thought behind that is you never know what you're going to get with a property owner if they're going to do it on their own and what kind of time frame they have with that. That was a council decision that was made to do that. And then the public ones, most of those are catch basins that are connected to the sanitary system. There are 4 storm line extensions that will have to be done with this project to be able to capture everything that is cross connected. With that being said, there is also more to this project, but right now we're focusing on projects 1 and 2. We're going to do a pause. We'll do monitoring, see where we end up with that. And then we'll have to phase in the other two projects that are in there, because those are mostly holistic repairs, obviously very expensive. And so right now we're just doing these two projects. We're going to satisfy our MAO, take a pause, see where we're at, and then figure out a strategy going forward. The overall goal is to reduce 65% of INI within the system, but we'll have to see how far we get with that once it comes time to do all the monitoring and everything like that. So in a nutshell, that's pretty much what we're dealing with.
Thank you, Darren. Yeah, I agree. You know, it's every community's dream that it's cross connections. These are the easy, big bang for the buck kind of, well, it's not easy to extend a storm drain in some areas if it's a low-lying area, but these are usually the low-hanging fruit, best return on investment. So, yeah, no, this is exciting, and I look forward to seeing how much is removed with just getting the cross connections out. Anybody else have questions for Darren? Cool. All right, so if we could, all in favor of the TAT recommending for approval, City of Gladstone's proposal, please raise your hand. Thank you all. Awesome. So again, Darren, I will work on getting the letter to you, and we'll get that out in a couple of weeks.
Yep, perfect. Thank you.
Yep. And just so everybody, just to keep it on the radar, the IGA states that you need to have approval by the TAT prior to entering into any contracts. So make sure this is on your list of things to do when you're dreaming up the project you're going to do. So any kind of investigation, any kind of design, any kind of construction, they want the TAT meeting and review and approval or recommend for approval prior to entering into contracts. So. Cool. All right.
And I guess I'll just put a plug in that this is a great group of resources, a lot of technical expertise here. And so if, as you're developing things, I'm sure, at least I will speak for Wes, we're always willing to look at things and talk through things or talk through our experiences with different contractors or contracting mechanisms and all of that fun stuff. So definitely lean on this group as a resource to help make decisions and drive projects forward. We're more than willing to work with our communities in that approach.
Agreed. Thank you. Yeah, I won't lie. I steal a lot of Oregon City stuff, but I also have other stuff that we can share. So no need to recreate the wheel on some of this. Cool. So item number four, Jeff's presentation on the CIP.
Yeah. Thanks, Jessica. I think this will be maybe 30, depending on how many questions I get, 35 to 40 minutes in that range. It's about 22 slides. And so I am, unfortunately, my kids got out of school early today. And so I'm working in my makeshift office, but I don't have a second screen. So if feel free to just interrupt me. Very open, collaborative. I don't want to speak at you. Feel free to ask questions if things come up. I won't be able to see because I'll be in presentation mode. So I'm just going to see my presentation, not how people are responding. So feel free to just speak up if you have a question or a comment. All right, I should start to share. Okay. Do you guys see
just
the presentation, or do you see the little box of people as well?
Well, we got a little. I got a side thing of little box of people. I can move everywhere.
Right. Okay. Perfect. Well, a little outline of the presentation. I'll give a little bit of a background on our CIP process, how we're structured, some updates on some of the projects that we've completed recently, some work we have planned. And then there'll be time for questions at the end, or as I mentioned before, feel free to interject or ask questions as we are moving along. That went one too many. There we go. So a little bit, I mean, WES as an organization and all of you as sewer people in general, what is our main objective here? And our main focus as an organization is to protect water quality and the public health. These are pictures of two avid fishermen we have as part of our group, as part of our organization, and I'm sure you share as many as well. And so really protecting that natural resource is extremely important and near and dear to, I believe, pretty much everybody that works in our industry's heart. I don't think you get into the sewer industry unless you're really passionate about making sure that our waterways and our water, which is a important resource to us, is treated well. And then beyond just the fishing, it's the wanting to make sure that our community has economic capabilities and that, health and safety of our population. And so it's great that our guys, our staff, as most other public workers, are really, they're there 24/7. There's always somebody to come out and help with something. And this is just another example of the dedication and commitment that we as an organization and as utilities in general share. So just kind of point out the fact of why we're here doing what we do. So when we talk about our capital plan, our capital plan is developed based on a lot of planning. So kicking off in about 2017, WES embarked on a significant amount of planning efforts. We visited Hoodland looking at a master plan that was, we've already had some projects be implemented out of. We'd completed a facility plan of boring in 2020. We did sanitary sewer master plan, which is a lot of projects are programmed out of. And we just recently wrapped up our Willamette facilities plan. So the projects that are presented in our capital plan are kind of bound up in analysis and studies that have been completed recently, all within the last 5 to 6 years, and many more recent than that. We are going to embark on, just as a note, we are going to embark on a facility planning effort at Hoodland that was really looking at the collection system side of things, and not as much in the plant. We assumed no growth out in the Hoodland area, and we've seen a number of land use applications come in for growth in the area, and so we are going to embark on that. So probably in the next 2 years we'll jump in and look at Hoodland and see what we might need to do up there to continue to allow that area to grow as well. and serve that area. That, as an example, that treatment facility up there has 1980 technology that was really getting phased out in the 80s. We're still using at that facility. We're still meeting our permit and still able to treat water, but it's not going to be able to allow much in the way of growth at all for that facility. So, and so as Chris pointed out, and I'll rehash here, this is why we're addressing I&I. So the slide on the left here shows if we didn't tackle our I&I, our collection system master plan, when we put it together, our sanitary sewer master plan, it looked at ongoing degradation of our facility. So if we made no investment in our piping, we would continue to see increases in I&I over time. And so what we would look at down in the 2080 time period is a peak flow coming to our Tri-City treatment plant of around 400 million gallons a day. So majority of that would be I&I. You can see the, we would still be in the 40-ish range. That orange line kind of shows the existing baseline flows un-I&I related or dry weather flows. And then the blue line really shows kind of the impact of the I&I, and the combination of the two is really kind of the peak flow. So if we all work together as a regional provider and work together to address the I&I, you can see in the 2080 time period, our peak flow goes from 400 down to about 168 million gallons. And so working together, the analysis that was completed in the sanitary sewer master plan identified nearly over $100 million in capital investment savings by making these investments in I&I reduction rather than increasing process facilities at the treatment plant. So we're as a group, as a region, are saving our ratepayers over $100 million over 60 years here by addressing I&I and reducing the peak flows anticipated at a treatment plant. And just for some of you, the reason it's the Tri-City plant, if you're not aware, the Kellogg plant is maxed out. It's landlocked, and so there is no expansion capabilities at Kellogg. And so for the analysis, it assumed that everything was, any additional flows beyond the peak flow at Kellogg would then be pumped to Tri-City. So that's why we're really looking at this as a Tri-City. And so I'll say every project that we've identified capacity for, you know, the outfall as an example, we're targeting that 160 million gallon capacity. And so when we're looking at kind of build out things that we're going to build out, we're really targeting that we are all going to address our I&I and get it down. So it's baked into our assumptions from a delivery perspective. So now that you kind of know how we got to the capital plan, here is what the next 5 years of our capital plan look like, starting in 22, 23. So this was, you know, this past year, 30 million. This year that we are just getting ready to kick into, we're anticipating spending around 40 million, and then 47, and then we're going to go down a little bit, 38 and 36. But as you can see, it's a significant amount of investment. We were not able to spend all of our 22, 23 capital dollars. We've moved those into 23, 24. So our current budget for 23, 24 is closer to $50 million we're planning to spend this year. You'll see in the slides coming up, a few projects make up a lot of that money. But we have a lot of work to do in our own system to work on making sure we have the capacity necessary to serve the community and handle the peak flows that we are anticipating seeing. When we look at CIP priorities, you know, we really have, I've been mentioning capacity, but that only tells one side of the story. Growth is driving some of our improvements. The other part of our improvements that we were really diving into is the reliability piece. When the Clean Water Act was approved, there was a lot of government funding provided to build this infrastructure, and a lot of it was built in the 70s to mid 80s, late 80s time period. And those are now coming 40 years, and there's a lot of systems that need a lot of work. And so that reliability piece is a huge component, as you'll see in the next slide. We break it into to capacity and reliability. And the reason we look at it that way too is, you know, capacity projects are eligible for SDC funds, and reliability projects are not. So we break it and look at it differently around percentages of what part of this project would be considered capacity versus reliability, so that we know where we're appropriately placing those SDC, the system development charges. So the growth is paying for growth is the goal there. So here is our five-year CIP, and I'll say, because we have these really recent planning documents and we were wanting to look at our rate forecasts beyond 5 years, we really wanted to look at, okay, over the next 12 years of capital projects we have identified, how can we normalize rates to a reasonable anticipated increase year over year? So we wanted to take a broader look to make sure that we weren't up for any surprises on rates. And so we are targeting from a rate perspective. Of course, the board needs to approve these rates, but we're anticipating around a 5% rate increase year over year to deliver the capital plan that we have identified here. But you can see in the next 5 years, it's about a 60-40, rough number, 60-40 split between reliability and capacity. And that holds true even when we look out of a 12-year plan as well. So taking a step and looking at projects that were completed and kind of a status of some of our bigger projects, in 2021, we completed the solids handling improvement projects. The construction estimates, or the engineer's estimate as we finished design, was $35.5 million. We received three bids. One was 35, one was 37, one was 35, and one was 33. The bid was 33.5 as the awarded contract. And when we came in, after change orders and other scope increases, we were at $35.9 million. So came in right about the engineer's estimate. We had about 3.4% of change orders due to, you know, designs, errors, and omissions, differing site conditions, things of that nature. And then we had 3.7% of owner-requested changes to the contract. And the largest portion of those owner-requested changes were, we were going to separately contract out the digester cleaning. That became a risk that West didn't want to own from a schedule constraint because of COVID and how it really impacted the contractor schedule. We decided to allow them to manage that work. And so that was the hugest part of the owner requested changes, was cleaning out the existing two digesters. All in all, this facility's up and running. Our power bill, we put a cogen engine, a 600 kW cogen engine at the facility to burn off the gas produced in our digesters. You know, our electric bill is down nearly 30% at this point. And once we get enough gas production, which will kind of peak out for the engine in 2033 is the estimate, we'll be running that 100% at 100% capacity. It'll really offset approximately 50% of the power consumption on site. So pretty big energy savings there that we're seeing as a result of that. The other big improvement we did was the Kellogg Creek improvements. And this was, I would call it a hodgepodge of improvements. The facility was at one point, Wes was going to get rid of a facility and put a pump station there and send everything to Tri-City. That was back in the early 2000s. The political environment changed. I wasn't around, so I don't know the political environment, but it has changed, and we made investments on keeping that facility around. This was a CMGC approach where we had the contractor on board during design. And so they, for that delivery method, you get a guaranteed maximum price. And so our construction was $18.6 million on the guaranteed maximum price. When it was all said and done, it ended up costing $17.4 million. And we were even able to account for those change orders in there. And we were able to add some work back in that was pulled out because of original anticipated costs. That's one of the benefits of that delivery method, is it's almost a time of materials construction contract. And so you get, if the contractor's more efficient than they originally anticipated, you know, you can reallocate those funds to do other work, which was beneficial to us. And then I just wanted to kind of show here on this slide, where are we making these investments? And the wastewater CIP by area of work. And so, and we have miscellaneous investments, which are administrative buildings and things of that nature, you know, equipment and vehicles, those types of stuff. And then you can see the split. The orange bar there is treatment and the blue bar is collection. And so you can see we have not quite a even split, but treatment's a little bit ahead of collection, but we're making investments in both areas pretty uniformly. And so then I took the CIP and broke it down over collection system and then Tri-City and then Kellogg just to kind of show everybody what we have coming up within our group here. And particularly, this is the 12-year look-see. And so as I mentioned, we were looking at rate forecasting. And so really, this is the list of projects we've got identified and that will be completed in the next 12 years. And so you can see in the INI reduction program currently, you know, what we're anticipating is a $24 million investment in that program. The Willamette Pump Station is a project that was split into two different contracts. We worked closely with ODOT. Jessica worked very well with ODOT at the very end of the 205 bridge project where we're going to be hanging our pipe off of that bridge, which saved us a ton of permitting effort and cost. And it's getting built with that project. And then we are just in negotiations with the consultant to start the design on the pump station and force main. And so when that gets done, we'll have a different pathway across the river towards the treatment plant. And Jessica, you can, this will allow us to reduce what we're sending over the Oregon City Bridge. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, the new force main on the I-205 bridge will be solely for the Willamette pump station, and it reduces the flows that go by Gravity Mill Street over the old arch bridge into Oregon City, freeing up more capacity for West Lynn and Highway 43 kind of area. So,
perfect. Thank you. And then I'll talk a little bit about the Clackamas Interceptor later. I have a slide there, but you can see we broke it up from a capital standpoint. We're looking at how we're going to build it and how we're going to phase it. We've got the lower, the middle, and the upper Clackamas Interceptors. And then the IT2 is integral to that. And so the IT2 is the pump station that takes flow that would normally go to Kellogg, and it pumps it over to Tri-City. And so all of those projects are basically everything. These projects up above the Rock Creek Interceptor are all underway, either in design, they're all in design, or some are under construction. We have the multi-pump station upgrades is a project that has multiple bid packages out for construction. The Rock Creek Interceptor work will start. We're going to get an RFP out this fall for that and start that effort a little bit sooner than we have in the capital plan documents currently. That'll be updated in our new five-year outlook in an effort to try to make sure we have enough time to get all the easements necessary and such and really work on that. And that's been a lot of conversations with Happy Valley on that particular one as it's going to allow a lot more service in that area. So you can see those are the big ones, and the lower, the Clackamas middle, lower, middle, and upper Clackamas is one of the big interceptor projects we have going that'll take a number of years, nearly a decade, to work on fully. Nope. So here you go. Sorry, I forgot this slide was here. The Clackamas Interceptor. So we've got the three Clackamas Interceptor segments, the upper, the lower, and the middle. They're included in that is the Mount Scott Interceptor, the IT2 pump station and force main. And as I mentioned, we're under design now, and we're going to use a phased construction. The design is going to be done all at the same time, up to 60%. That way we make sure, since it's a gravity system, we want to make sure that the Clackamas Interceptor system as a whole functions properly. So we're going to do the design all at one time to make sure that we can address any issues during that design phase. And then we will break off three separate bid packages for construction. And then here's, I mentioned the Willamette, but our Willamette pump station sits down here at the bottom of roughly the bottom of 10th Street near Salamo, just off Old Willamette. And so we're building the bridge crossing with the I-205 bridge. And so we are working with a consultant right now for scoping to get the rest of this design and the actual pump station. We'll be replacing the existing pump station completely as part of that project. So work on the Tri-City CIP. This is looking at a 12-year. You can see it's $136 million total, but $100 million or $101 million of that are really two projects. One is the Tri-City Outfall. That's a 90-inch diameter pipeline, which I have a slide in here we'll look at, and then the wet weather expansion, which I also have a slide on. This landfill mitigation project, the Old Rossman Landfill, I mean, just to clarify why a wastewater utility would be doing landfill mitigation, we purchased property so we could grow our plants. This was done back in the late 90s. As part of that, we're going to need to build on that landfill site to expand our plant, and so we are going to have some form of mitigation. There's a small amount of hydrocarbons that need to be cleaned up that we'll be working to clean up and get that all ready for construction of the wet weather expansion. And so that's the reason we have some landfill mitigation on there. Our primary clarifiers are underway. That's a project that's going to span 3 years at our treatment plant, and that's underway. And our IPS is another big one that we're working on as well. And some of the other items there are out into the future. But you'll notice if you've driven by the plant, the big mountain of material has been removed. If you take note of that or not, that was done last fall. That was a land use issue that needed to be addressed as part of the initial MBR construction. They stockpiled material that's a floodplain, so we needed to balance cut and fill in the floodplain to meet the Oregon City land use. A little bit about our outfall project. As I mentioned before, it's a 90-inch diameter pipe. We started this project in 2019. We did a routing study and a sizing analysis to determine, one, where is the best place in the river to build an outfall? And really, we want a deep spot in the river that has really stable river conditions and is, I'll put in quotations, easy to get to. And you can see the gray dashed line there is our existing outfall, and the green dashed line is our proposed alignment of our new outfall. In 2020, we got approval by the voting public to cross Johnstorm Park based on our preferred alignment. So once we had that squared away, we then decided, because of the route that was decided, you know, coming here at the roundabout, these are all on-ramps that are 30, 40 feet tall. And then you're going to come out into the river. The half of the project was going to have to be tunneled. And so we decided to go out and deliver the project using a progressive design build approach, where we have a contractor and an engineer team. So we have one contract with a contract engineer design build team, and we've been working with them on that. We are just, I'm anticipating at the end of this month receiving the initial guaranteed maximum price from them. We're at a 60% design level, and that'll kick into negotiations with the anticipation to be out there next March, starting our tunneling effort. We'll be launching our tunnel from this general area here, and we'll be tunneling all the way out into the river, and we will do a wet recovery of the machine. So we'll tunnel out, the machine will come out in the river, and we'll raise it up. So there'll be no disturbances to the park at all from our project at this point. Construction, yeah, as I mentioned, will start in 2024 with the ODOT project. Sorry, did somebody have a question?
Yeah. I was just going to add a question in general. Is this the project where we had to specifically buy the drill head or something like that to do it, because it's site specific and material specific and all those things? Seems like that was a big part of this project in general.
That's correct. Yeah, the tunneling machine design and procurement is a 9-month-ish time period, which is why once we get this guaranteed maximum price, we'll be working to negotiate that and get that under contract so we can make that order so we can get out and deliver this next start this next spring. Yeah, it's a custom designed for our geology here.
Right. I thought of that. I remembered something about that. This will be a huge improvement. I can't wait to see this one come together. And hopefully you guys will do a ton of videos and be able to see that, you know, the recovery of that borehead and all of those things that happened. It'd be awesome. Yep.
Yeah, I'm working on developing a web page, a project web page that's a little more than just informational. It's more kind of a quote-unquote walking tour where you can move along the alignment and get different pieces of information on tunneling or what's in the water, what it looks like under the water. So a little more interactive web pages we're looking at developing on this and anticipating having that updated through construction. So you know, as we're out there tunneling, we can start adding more pictures and more information to it as it's going along. So hopefully that's a nice way to interact with the public. And as a TAT group, I'd be more than happy to, you know, have one of these meetings on site instead of a meeting like this. And, or if it's not a TAT meeting, I can arrange a tour while it's going on so we can all see the tunneling. So I'm pretty excited to see it as well. It'll be one of the bigger tunnels out to the Willamette River in the Northwest for sure. It'll be one of the bigger tunnels in the Northwest. You know, it's a 90-inch pipe because when you do an outfall, really we're looking towards build-out capacity. So that's that 168 million I mentioned before. And so in order to get that, we have our 90-inch pipe and combine it with our existing outfall. That's how we're meeting our build-out capacity. The spot in the river we've picked is much better for mixing and much better for overall water quality and the health of the river. And construction will be two-phased because of the ODOT bridge construction. That's added a complexity to our project for sure. So we'll be tunneling out to the river next July to October in that wet weather, in the in-water work period. We'll actually cap our pipeline, and then we'll come back in 25 and build the diffuser piece of the project out. It'll protect our pipeline during their construction to make sure they're out of the way by the time we come back and build our diffusers in there, and it'll allow any kind of ground disturbing activities or, you know, silt disturbing activities to be done before we get out and build our final diffusers. So we needed that to be able to coordinate with them, but I think it provides us some benefits as well. And then the wet weather expansion, this increases, we have a 70 million gallon a day capacity at our primary side. This wet weather expansion will raise our peak to 105 MGD, which will meet the 2040 peak flows. We've completed our facility plan, and we are currently under negotiations with DEQ on some of our assumptions. We'll kick off design in 2026, and design through construction will be bringing the facility online in 2031. This will be a facility that comes online and operates only when we're anticipating peak wet weather. And so it's not something that'll be just online all the time running. It'll be something that's brought online to meet that peak wet weather demand and meet the nutrient, meet the limits of the permit. We currently don't have a hard ammonia limit in our permit. And so some of the orange boxes you see there highlighted are if we end up getting one because of the TMDLs and the Willamette change, what our permit allowances are, we've design the system to allow us to meet what we would anticipate or what we could reasonably anticipate for those limits by making a few additional tanks and using the system slightly differently. So we will go into it with design with flexibility in mind, but we should have more clarity from DEQ at the point we go into the design on what they think of our facility plan assumptions and approach. I see two chats. Is there?
Oh, no, we're just chatting about we'll set up, we'll keep them under construction and set up a site visit.
Perfect. And wrapping up here, Kellogg Creek, 12-year CIP. Initially, it's much less money invested at Kellogg Creek, but as I mentioned, it's landlocked. We can't really grow it. And so these are reliability-related projects holistically. We are working on the admin lab remodel, the administrative building and lab remodel there. We are reviewing proposals now and we'll be getting that project underway. IPS pumps 1 and 2 are underway and should be wrapped up this year. The aeration basin improvement should be wrapped up this year as well. And so we're wrapping up a number of things here, but a lot of the work at Kellogg is out beyond the 5-year window. And the biggest one is this dewatering and digester. Currently, we haul digested sludge from Kellogg in trucks over to Tri-City, and we dewater it at Tri-City. There's a number of reasons we do that, as nutrient limits, some permit limits, but also space to build dewatering and digester. And so part of this admin lab remodel will be moving office space and locker room space out of the middle of the plant where it currently resides up into the front of the plant in the admin building so that we can then repurpose that building later, which I think shows here. Yeah. So this space here is currently offices and locker room for plant staff. And so these locker rooms and such are going to be relocated up to be included in the administrative area of the plant. And this will grow a little bit. And then we'll retool the kind of the central heart of our plant to add dewatering and digester improvements. And so again, that project design phase will kick off in 28 or 29. So it's a little ways out into the future. But once this project's complete, we won't have to haul digested sludge. We'll be hauling dewatered biosolids from our facility, which will really reduce the trucking. Then we can also add cogen here and capture those gases in a more efficient manner than we currently are. Right now we're making more gas than we can burn in our existing cogen engine just because it's so old and not sized appropriately. So it'll be good to get some of these improvements done. And as I mentioned, the secondary clarifier. So, you know, when you're out at a treatment plant and there's a clarifier, you walk by where it's the cleaned water spilling over these wandering facilities, the weir walls there. Underneath that is this big rake arm that's gathering up the solid settled sludge and getting it either sent to the digester or back to the head of the aeration basin. So those pipes are submerged. We can only take them out of service in the summer because we need the capacity in the winter. And so we are just overhauling and recoating the steel and making sure that the floor is in good condition. And so we did one last year and we'll do one this year, and that'll wrap the project up. And then I'll just throw this in there. You know, a lot of this planning work was done right around the time of these significant increases in inflation that we've experienced over the last few years. And so this year I will be digging in a little bit closer on kind of our cost estimates and making sure that we've brought them up to make sure that we're covered with this crazy inflation we've seen over the last couple of years. You know, this is the construction cost index for Seattle. And so while we hear about inflation for, you know, your groceries and your power and other things, like from a construction standpoint, we saw really crazy inflation, 20% between 20 and 21. I'm sure we've all seen it in our bids and our costs that we're seeing. But to make sure that we are forecasting correctly, we're going to be diving back into our cost estimates a little bit this summer and making sure that we're looking at them not on something that was done in 2017, but brought up to current anticipated costs, just to make sure that we have that captured moving forward so that we can adjust and make changes if we need to into the future, again, as a goal of, you know, managing that cost increase to the ratepayers in the sewer rates. So that's what keeps me up at night as the new capital manager, is looking at that slide and hoping that we have budgeted correctly and hoping that our estimates are captured correctly. But we'll be diving into that this summer and looking at how to make sure that information is the most current and thoughtful as we move forward.
Jeff, I'm glad to hear you're working on that, because I don't know how many times I've looked at a master plan or a planning level cost, and you actually get the bid documents prepared and start getting some proposals on a project, and it's another, you know, 50% more, not that bad, but 25% more is not unreasonable or higher, depending on when that, you know, the cost there, the planning level documents and cost estimate was received. So that's a great idea. I'm glad to hear that you're at least forecasting what the future may bring, because all bets are off with construction. I think we've all are feeling that as we, you know, do our capital project planning and actually deliver these projects. So,
yeah, I've already experienced that on the IT2 pump station and Forest Main. You know, our estimates coming back on the Forest Main are almost as much as what we anticipated for the whole project. You know, that estimate was put together in 2018 and we kicked off design in 2020. And so, of course, no way to really anticipate that we'd see quite the significant increase that we saw between 20 and 21. But to that point, I think it's just time to make sure that we go back and look at when costs were prepared and make sure that we've at least captured what we can anticipate based on what's happened over the last 5 years and project forward maybe a little bit more, a little less conservatively on what we expect year over year inflation to be, because I think there's some uncertainty there.
When you're up at night next, Jeff, just give a call on my side, because I'm probably in the same boat thinking the same thing. Oh, my. It's always stressful when you're planning for these projects.
Yep. So that's kind of the overall. I hope that was informative on what we've got coming. I'd be happy to talk about any of the projects we have going on now. I'll stop sharing so I can see everybody again. But we're busy as a group. You know, I mentioned we didn't get to our 22-23 spending. We didn't spend our entire money. We have a lot of projects underway. But we're also staff limited. And so we, in our, assuming it gets approved here next week, we've put in for two more engineering positions to grow our group to make sure that we can deliver the projects we have outlined in the time frame that they're outlined. And so we're working towards making sure we have the bandwidth to stay on top of the projects and deliver them. And, you know, I think we've done really good at trying to keep our bigger capital projects moving forward. But as a group, you know, it's the small things around the plant that make operators' lives better and things of that nature that we're just not able to get to as readily as we'd like to. And so we have money in our budget every year to do, whether they're renewal and replacement type projects or just process improvement types projects, we have money in our budget. You know, it's $500,000 to $800,000 in there every year to do those types of projects. And we just haven't really been able to tackle those as much as I'd like to. And I think adding some bandwidth was really going to help us manage that. An example is like hypo, right? Hypo costs have skyrocketed for us recently. And so, you know, looking at how we can optimize our hypo control could pay long-term pay dividends for us, but we just, as an engineering group, haven't had the bandwidth to really dive into some of those types of projects and manage them. And so some of those types of what I would consider, in quotations, low-hanging fruit, things that we could really dive in and see what could we optimize and make a little bit better. Those are the types of things I hope that we can increase our work on as we start to add a few more engineers to our group to help manage those things. Because everybody knows, whether it's a small project or big project, it still takes about a lot of times the same amount of effort to manage from as a project manager. So, and we had Hakan, who was a backfill for promotions, but we are adding one staff here at the end of the month that'll be joining us, another senior civil engineer, and he'll be joining us here in a couple weeks. And so, and we're hoping for one more if we can get it to grow our staff by two. So we'll see where that lands. I'm not the final approver of that. That's beyond my role. But if the board approves it, we'll be able to add another body to help manage the long list of projects we have to make sure that we don't miss the boat on any of our planning and timing, because some of our facilities, as Chris is well aware and other people are, is, you know, we're at capacity now, and so we really need to get going and increase the capacity so we don't have those kinds of conversations. And now I'll shut up and listen.
Thanks, Jeff. Does anybody have any more questions for Jeff on projects or anything CIP related?
Yeah, no, just a general comment from me, and I'll be quiet after this, but I know that I get to see these at the regional level, the regional advisory committee member level, and I think it's important for us to all to understand that, I mean, we're all working together. There are two treatment plants in our region. Those are the ones that serve all of our communities, and it's exciting to see that we're investing in future capacity increases. And we're investing in future collection system increases. And in general, it's important for us to all have a idea that we're all intertwined. So I go back to my beginning statement and the fact that I'd love to see more people grab a hold of that I&I money and continue to upgrade their systems to help out the processes that we're dealing with. So thank you, Jeff. I think it's important for us all to have an idea, and I appreciate the detailed review.
Thanks, Chris.
I do have a question, I think. So I'm just curious, is there any mechanism, because obviously a key part of your CIP making sense is that the flows coming into the plants are reduced substantially. Are we having some sort of like an annual check-in to see how this I&I funding is delivering on the intended outcomes? I think that feedback would be valuable to your member communities to know if our investment strategies are keeping up to pace. That's a, if we have to redo that outfall because it's too small, that's obviously going to be a massive cost that's passed on to all of our ratepayers.
Yep. I'll start and Jeff, you can fill in. We do have a ongoing annual contract with Jacobs to update our hydraulic model. Both the INI projections are tracking to make sure that our degradation was assumed correctly, and also to see the reduction in INI based on the projects that we're all doing. So we're keeping close tabs on that, and also the model dictated a lot of the timing of these capacity increases, so making sure that those are still accurate. So from that point of view, and then also reporting annually, starting this year, I'll be putting together a report of all of our INI projects and funding that's been used and include in that modeling results, whether we're on track, need to speed things up, or where we are. Jeff, anything to add to that?
No, I mean, I think you covered it well. I think that, you know, when you embark on a sewer master plan, you can take the INI is not going to get any worse than it is today. And we run our model and say, here's what we can see. Or you can say, well, we're probably going to, and INI generally gets worse over time. And so, you know, we made some assumptions in our master plan that assumed that INI would continue to get worse. And so tracking and validating those assumptions and the work that our member communities are doing around and ourselves, quite frankly, we have our own INI projects that we're working on in terms of reducing and being able to report out on the success of those projects and where we're at and validate our model assumptions is, yeah, I mean, I think that's, we're going to be doing that annually or at least every couple of years looking at what that is just because of the speed of projects and things, you know, it's not like a switch you turn on and off, but yeah.
I do just want to say, yeah, we did assume degradation, but we also put realistic limits on it. It was right. Based on age of pipe. So it's not like I and I can just ask, you know, go exponentially. Right. And we also assumed, you know, you can only do so much INI reduction. We didn't reduce areas that couldn't be tightened up to unrealistic projections. But keeping a close tabs on that and making sure that our assumptions were correct and we're tracking appropriately.
The other investment we've made that Jessica's led the charge on is our flow monitoring system that we have out in our collection system now is significantly improved from what it was when we did our collection system master plan. And so, you know, refining that model with better data will only help us be more accurate with that, which is why we're able to say, hey, if you need help with a flow monitor, you know, we have one that we can let you deploy to look at because it's important, you know, for that story, as you mentioned, Kenny, they're big assumptions. And so, you know, when you do the big plans, you make big assumptions, but being able to validate those over time as you're making those investments is really our target and our goal. Did that answer the question?
Yeah, I think the main thing that Oregon City would most likely just want to make sure is that you guys are out there beating the drum to make sure that everyone understands that these improvements all require work from us as your member community so that we have some support to actually make some investments.
I do think, you know, I said earlier that West Lynn was the only member community that didn't have a project under the INI IGA, but that doesn't mean that they aren't doing things. West Lynn has been working on reducing INI in their system upstream of their pump stations and stuff. So it's just a matter of getting them to apply for the funding and us helping them. So. But we're keeping an eye on everybody. And not only is it the collection system, it's the portions of the pie for the treatment as well. So it's divided amongst everybody and kind of keeping track that we all do what we need to do to hit those goals. So.
Yeah, we kind of missed the boat on our annual CIPP lining project we do for our sewer collection system just due to short staffing and general capacity of workload. But we usually have designed those projects in-house previously. And now that there is shared funding available, maybe we look at, you know, shipping that out for a consultant to design it and getting on a more regular schedule. So that is our goal, for sure.
Yeah, I know Eric had been addressing it for years, and you have the lining, especially in that Lake Oswego end of things, tributary to your Mapleton pump station. So, cool. If there's no further questions on that stuff, we had on the agenda for Kenny to give us an update on his Oregon City lateral rehabilitation program. But if everybody's okay with it, we will push that till September. And have that at our September meeting. All good. Nobody's totally disappointed not to hear about Oregon City's lateral rehab program. And then just roundtable. Does anybody have any questions or concerns or things you want the TAT to look into? Marina?
I would love perspective. Westland is currently rebuilding our Calaroga pump station so that it is outside of the floodplain elevation. It's going to be great for the creek that's immediately adjacent to the pump station. But Eric and I were sort of going back and forth. We're transitioning to modern submersible pumps, which most of our pump stations don't have. In the past, I've worked for consultants that have spec'd a spare pump to be kept at the ops yard or wherever. In the past, Westland has not kept spare pumps, and so I just was wondering what your guys' procedures are and what you'd recommend, or if you didn't keep spare pumps and then you ran into trouble, now you do.
I'll go, and then everybody, feel free to contradict if it's different where you are. We have in the past spec'd to have a spare, and it sits on a shelf and the gaskets dry out and it never gets used, or people forget it's there. So typically, you know, your pump station is built so that you can, your firm capacity is your largest pump out of service. So you should have redundancy in your station that you have an additional pump if somebody goes down, kind of thing. And so no, we don't, and especially with the size of our pumps, you can't keep a spare 10 MGD pump. So that's kind of what we do. But if anybody else thinks differently or has a different process.
I'm just going to have a backup dry prime pump or something you can pull in place if it's a real emergency to be able to facilitate that kind of pump hooking up. Pretty important.
Yeah, I'll just agree with Jessica. The parts that don't like being dried out tend to dry out after, honestly, a couple of years. So unless you actually have a problem, you wind up with something that's an actual hunk of metal on your shelf.
Perfect. Thanks, guys.
And I guess just from what Kyle said, we do try to have I don't want to call it a fleet because it's not a fleet, but we do try to have critical dry prime pumps for certain pump stations. You know, if you have a real high head pump station or something like that, that might be really hard to get an emergency pump back in. We do try to get something that could be deployed to different places and hooked up. And so that is how we've tackled some of that, I would say, to try to avoid the emergency. Hey, United Rentals, I need this out here now. We try to have some of that available to us as part of our fleet. I'll call it a fleet, as part of our fleet.
I would offer to share, but usually one of us is in trouble. All of us is in trouble if it's a power outage kind of thing. But yeah, reach out. You know, as you know, pump stations, all different sizes, all this different configurations. We've got everything from sump pump size you can buy off of the shelves at Home Depot to the size of a Volkswagen Bug, 10 MGD pumps. So yeah, reach out if ever there's an emergency. But
I was just going to say, some of the things we've added to our pump stations too is we have the multi-pump position upgrades, is making those connections much easier. And so whether it's you don't have an emergency standby generator on site, you're going to bring one out, but making it so the plug, you know, plugging in and connecting those generators is as simple as not needing a full-on electrician out there to do it, but, you know, Maltrick plugs and other things like that can make that work in that emergency situation a little bit easier. I know we're including a number of those kinds of improvements in our upgrades to make it easier on staff to really respond to those emergencies.
Yeah, bypass ports, valving on the force main so you can pump around if you have to, and connections. So. Anybody else? All right. Well, thank you all. Very good to see you all. I will get those letters sent out on the TAT recommendations to Gladstone and Oregon City. I'm sorry, Milwaukee, in the next couple of weeks. As always, reach out if you have questions, and I look forward to seeing you all in September. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.